I'm going to be speaking really about finances after retirement, or planning for finances for retirement. And I'm a retired social worker, and to keep my hand in social work, I'm a volunteer at the Pike Place Market Ministry in Seattle. This is a pilot project of the Episcopal Church. There's a woman priest that's trying to start a congregation right in the market part of Seattle. And this Pike Place Market is an old place with vegetables and meats and fish and flowers and delis and restaurants and all sorts of artisans that make anything you can think of, from jewelry to pictures to wooden toys. There are Indonesian people there. There are still people that raise vegetables and bring them into market from out in the Kent Valley. You can buy fresh spinach and carrots and broccoli and herbs and things in season. But anyway, this woman priest had this vision that there could be a church in the midst of this market area. And the diocese agreed to let her try it. So she's had this church going now for about a year. And we have recently just moved into the market area itself from First Avenue. We were in what was called the Lotus Cafe, an old cafe that was pretty run down. She fixed it up as a nice place of worship, but now we're down in what was an antique shop in the historical part of the market. And it's a lot better because it has more windows and you can see into it and see that it's a place for hospitality and a place for worship. She celebrates the Eucharist Wednesday, Thursday, and has her worship service Sunday at 5 p.m. And I volunteer there on Tuesdays, and that is mostly for hospitality, for people that walk by and want to come in. And a variety of people come in. One noon, a woman came in who was an anorexic, and she had to talk to somebody so that she could get through the noon hour. On another time, a man came in from a detox program and had to talk to somebody and express his feelings about being picked up by the police and put in this unit, which he didn't think was very good, and to talk about plans for his life. Another day, a man came in on a bicycle who lived in a camp someplace outdoors. He said, "Is this a place where I can write a letter?" And I said, "Sure, come on in," and gave him a cup of coffee and a cookie. And he was a brilliant person, really. He knew so much about the history of the Bible and history in general. And I said, "Gee, you must have a big library." And he said, he did, in his brown garbage sack. So he just carried everything with him. And he said, "Did we want any coffee beans?" Because he went through the garbage from the Starbucks coffee company every day, and he could give us some coffee beans if we wanted them. But he was just a really an interesting person, and you just feel that your life has been enriched by being able to be in touch with these people. Each one is so precious and unique. Sometimes we will give money to people that need it, that come in. An Indian woman came in one day who wanted money for parking. She was going to look for a job in the area. She promised to come and pay it back, and she did when she got herself settled a little bit. We have a lot of needy people in the area that are living in the low-income housing. They are lonely and need somebody to talk to, or need a loan till the first of the month. And The priest calls herself Mother Carol Ludden. And one of the first people that came to her was a young artist from the market. And he's dying of AIDS now, and she has taken him into her home to die because he doesn't want to die in the hospital. That's a pretty rough situation. His sister came out from the East Coast to care for him, but, you know, there's this ever-present spectacle of death always with you, you know, and he's getting so much worse day by day by day that all of our lives are sort of wrapped up in him and how he's doing. And he's lost a lot of weight now, weighs about 70 pounds, I think, so I don't know how he'll be. But anyway, this session is going to be about money. And I first looked up the title in Ecclesiastes, and I'd like my friend to read some of those for us. 11:10.
Remove vexation from your mind and put away pain from your body, for you and the dawn of life are vanity.
And 3:13.
Also that it is God's gift to man that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil.
And 10:19.
Bread is made for laughter and wine gladdens life and money answers everything.
Well, that's kind of interesting. You know, we can say we don't need that awful stuff, but all of us have to have some of it to live on. And I think a lot of people that are planning for their retirement are a little bit fearful when they're thinking about what are we going to live on. At least we were. You know, we wanted to retire. My husband had a heart attack, and we thought, gee, you know, how will we really make it? It's hard to figure out how you'll make it and what kind of an income you will have from savings that you have. So I thought maybe we could help each other out a little bit on it. You're such an unusual group of people. We found that out in our classes last week when we asked in a large group how many people owned their own home out of about, I don't know, maybe 50 people that were there. 90% of them still owned their own home and lived in it, which is quite unusual. You know, a lot of people in the elderly range would live in apartments or condos or retirement centers or something like that. So I thought it would be a good study to find out, you know, what kind of an income we're living on here. I guess the mainstay of most folks when they retire is still Social Security. Is that true with everyone here who's retired, or do you have some other income that's, or do you have Social Security, I guess I should say?
Well, many of us have Social Security. We do.
We've got some young kids over there. They don't know.
Right. Are you retired yet?
So all of us who are retired have Social Security?
Mm-hmm. Yes. No, semi, but on the basis that I draw full Social Security. That's the age of give-ups. But some of the people who are approximately my age, and some of us here, I'm sure, have been in the Social Security system since its beginning.
Right.
As a wage earner. And if we've earned substantial maximum amounts subject to withholding during that period of time, then the figure comes out of this very significantly, it's some $800 a month, around the figures. If you burn the maximum all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite significant.
Right. What other kinds of income would help? Because really that's not enough for anybody to live on very well.
Pensions.
Pensions?
It's against me.
Is it? I guess I'll let it dry out. There's some more in the drawer over there. What other kind of income do we have?
Well, like you said, state retirement. And we had the unfortunate or fortunate happening that when we sold our house, we couldn't get any money for it. So we took a loan down and a contract. So we have the monthly income from a contract coming in. So.
That's good to live. Pensions?
Teachers' retirement. That's the same as state.
Yes, right.
Pensions and state retirement and teachers' retirement. And rental, house payment type thing.
Yeah.
Mortgage payment.
Contract.
Yeah, contract. Anything else?
Well, interest on your CDs.
Interest income. Kind of gets to be a little bit of this and a little bit of that, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. What else?
Well, and for some people who retire, they get into some of the type of work.
Uh-huh.
Part-time basis, perhaps, something they wanted to do. In my own case, I'm in a business where I continue working even though I'm past retirement age, and in effect, I'm self-employed, so the pay still suits me.
Would you say part-time in that case?
Yeah, continue working maybe in your the field that you retired from formally, or you shift over into something else.
Do any of you do any consulting work? I think that's a fancy way of saying that they hire you without paying their goodies on the side.
Gus does.
Does he? Consulting. You could write that. Does anyone have money in the stock market or anything like that for dividends and municipal bonds or anything?
Municipal bonds. Because they're tax free.
That's what.
Along that same line would be annuities.
Uh-huh, annuities. Does anyone have annuity with church groups? They're always advertising, or with colleges.
An item that's fairly common now is IRAs.
Right.
Since the law has permitted the increased amount. And that has some flexibility. First of all, the income tax is postponed. And you can leave it in beyond age 65 for a period of time. If you have no immediate need for those dollars at the time you reach 65.
That's a good deal for younger people. You younger people, do you partake of the IRAs?
Well, my wife is in a position now where she has an IRA.
Uh-huh.
She's young enough that she can contribute to it. And that will be available somewhere down the road.
It was a lifesaver for us because we couldn't sell our home and we had to buy another home. So fortunately, a number of years ago when I was teaching, I put $200 a month into this IRA, and it had really grown to the point where It was really unexpected. I didn't know how much it was until, you know, what business person I am. My husband isn't any better, you know, so we just let it go on and on and on. But when we wanted to buy a house when we retired, well, we started looking into it, and I was amazed.
That was
cool. And the money can come from any source as long as you've got the $2,000 a year income. That's mm-hmm. the maximum that I believe that you can put in now. And that doesn't have to be the money that you earn. You have to earn that much in that year, but those specific dollars don't have to go into it. You can take money from any place, from a savings account or any place, mm-hmm. and make the contribution.
I think the teachers and hospital and state hospital employees, I know, perhaps certain other ones, were able to put into this long before it became general.
Right. Because that was at least 20 years ago when I did this.
Most of us haven't heard of IRAs for what, the last 5 years or so?
Well, the thing that was available earlier to teachers was teachers and people, nonprofit corporations. Mm-hmm. A special tax shelter device for
employees. You mean, yeah, I don't believe it was
called that. That was not an IRA, and then IRA came along, and that is additional.
That's right.
Professional corporations,
yes.
The ability to put away tax shelter, tax deferred.
Yeah.
Money.
That's what it was called.
That.
Tax deferred.
That's the sort of arrangement that we have. Mm-hmm. Organization.
That is a really good idea, isn't it? Do you plan then, kind of with that in mind? For your retirement?
Well,
uh-huh.
In our case, it's handled by a group that specializes in investing this sort of thing, and you just have to keep your fingers crossed and hope they do a good job.
Yeah, right.
But they shift it around and try to take advantage.
Is this in your company?
Pardon me?
In your company?
Well, I'm in a professional corporation of 16 doctors, and so we have consultants that take this money, and you just hope, you know, that obviously if something drastic happened to the stock market, it would be
right.
It might not be there, but there's that.
You know, when we were both working, we didn't really have time to sit down and plan very sensibly, because by the time you work all day, and you know, and especially in hospital work, I think you're pretty well burned out as far as thinking about stuff. So we just did the best we could, you know, and tried to, the last couple years, tried to just save every penny that we could in mutual funds and things that didn't really seem like they were doing that well, you know, taking a chance on it. And savings bonds, which at that time weren't really getting that much interest, now they're doing a lot better in interest. But we did the best we could, and then after we retired, just seemed like it took us about 2 years before we really knew what was going on, you know, what we really could kind of count on every month. But I guess we'd been retired about 6 months when they had a program at the library near us on financial planning by American Express. And a gal came and told about the different ways you could invest your money. And we knew that we were going to have to cash our savings bonds and put them into something else for income. So we went to hear it. And it turned out to be a really good thing for us, because in the first place, she was a person who had been a psychologist, and she was very conservative in her approach. And we took a liking to her right away. And so about 3 or 4 months later, we went to talk, and she started helping us, you know, turn these bonds into some investments and just little by little, she helped us buy some utility stock that paid good dividends. And what were those other things called?
Is it a Fannie Mae? No, what is it?
Ginnie Mae.
Ginnie Mae.
We bought some of that.
You know these ladies' names.
Oh, man, Jenny.
Some CDs. And different kinds of bonds and things. And when we were buying them, you know, you really could get a pretty good interest on some of them, like 12%. But then money markets then were paying 17 or 16 or, you know, so, but they've gone way down now, so. One thing about utility stock that we hadn't known was, or I hadn't anyway, was that, you know, the price can drop way down, but that just makes your dividend rate go way up, you know.
That is, the percentage does.
Yeah, the percentage.
So the actual money is the same, naturally.
But if you wanted to sell it, of course, you would hope that the price of the utility was up. Do any of you have a financial advisor like that with one of the bigger companies?
The Missouri Lutheran Church has a program for retirement, which if your community has someone that is presenting, and I would highly recommend that you go to it. I think it was something like 8 sessions once a week or something. And they just cover everything. They have experts in different fields come in. That was really, one of my friends was conducting this and invited me to come. Roland couldn't come. You know, because evenings were always busy. So, but it was really, really good, and I would surely highly recommend that one.
It's called the SMART program.
SMART program, that's right. I was trying to think of what it was.
Right, and it is a very worthwhile.
At least you find out some of the terminology, don't you, and at least know a little bit more of what you're doing.
They bring in someone from Social Security, and they brought in a lawyer, and
you have a booklet. It's a thick book when you get through with all these different chapters, because every week, was it 8 weeks?
Something.
I think it was about that long. Every week you'd cover a different thing, and then they'd have people come in and you get more literature, you know. And you had a lot of stuff to read. Anyhow, I thought it was very good.
What it did for me was to make me realize that I needed to get all of my records in order and up to date. And that's something that you're kind of lax about sometimes.
Right.
They should go to all the nursing homes and get them doing that too, because I think that's terribly hard to get older folks to get things in order. I remember that.
That
was good.
Well, it sounds like a good idea. And a person, when they retire, unless you're working part-time, you just have this amount of money that you have, and you really need to take care of it and do your best with it so that you can continue supporting the organizations that you like to and the churches and everything. It's just good stewardship. I think it's good stewardship.
Weren't your wife? Yes.
You folks aren't retired yet, are you?
Yes, we are.
We went to this SMART program too about 5 years ago, and they told us that if we were retiring within 5 years, we were already 10 years too late to start planning. That's one of the things they stress, is early planning. And
it's through the Lutheran Church?
Yeah, it's put out by.
Well, I thought it was sponsored by the Aid Association for Lutherans, isn't that? And they invite people to go to Appleton or someplace, Wisconsin, and take the training to go around and give these seminars. And the couple who taught ours, he had been, well, I guess they both had been there to take that training, and they had run sessions in several churches around and for some time.
Well, if you can't do that, try to find one at one of the public libraries, because they often will have these financial planners come in and you know, give you an idea of what there is available for investments. Yes?
One of the problems all of us here are faced with is that the planning that should have been done, as she said, should have been done, you know, let's say 5 years before. Mm-hmm. And once you get into the point where you're going to start using those resources you accumulated,
right.
Then it's a conservation type of thing.
Right.
One of the other things, and this is, again, not pertinent to any of us here, probably, because we're at the point where we maybe have not done some things should have been done already, but the people who do this thing, now my field happens to be life insurance,
mm-hmm.
and I'm exposed to the different people who do this, including life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
There's a designation called Chartered Financial Analyst, I think it is. It's a professional designation,
mm-hmm.
which I don't have. But all of these, practically all of these people are selling something. And
right.
I'm not going to denigrate life insurance men or securities men or whatever it may be. But one of the problems that's in the field now is that these people are all selling something, including
right.
George Luland, and you need to have a chance to size the person up over a period of time. What is this person's uh-huh. code of ethics? How much does he know about what he's attempting to sell you? What's his financial interest?
Right.
And in some lines of business, for example, in the life insurance industry, normally you have a contract with your company, and that says that you're going to devote substantially all your time to life insurance sales, and you're going to submit the business to your primary company, and that's what the contract says. In practice, those who've been in the business many years devote time to other things as we become knowledgeable enough to do this,
mm-hmm.
and we submit our company, our business to a different company.
Mm-hmm.
Because at a point in time, my primary company, I have certain products that I won't sell because they're not priced right.
Mm-hmm.
They're out of line with the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this type of thing, and then the other aspect of it is the commission aspect of it. Because again, my business is practically all life insurance business, what I do, and I lay out on the table when I'm meeting people for the first time, or I reiterate it, if you buy this particular contract from me, if it happens to be the old standard whole life contract, my company's going to pay me 50 or 55% of the first premium as my commission, and then I'm going to get renewals over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
I have a decided financial interest in whether you buy the type of product that I sell, and then number two, whether you buy it from me mm-hmm. rather than going to someone else. I also lay on the line my conviction that the product I'm selling is a good product,
mm-hmm.
and in the circumstance in which I'm going to try to sell it, it fits, because many times I've said to people, and it's interesting that you mentioned savings bonds, because right now, savings bonds are an excellent place to put money.
Right.
Because the interest rate is, I think it was 9.49 the last time I saw, free of state income taxes, and the income can be deferred
uh-huh.
for a period of time. So I lay, as far as my own effort is concerned, I lay on the line, here are my credentials, and the credentials are some 35 years in my business and a charter life under record designation, which is a professional designation, and some experience in securities and real estate. I don't carry a license in either securities or real estate. Any comments I make or recommendations I make are in effect gratis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people work for fees.
Right.
And in terms of fees, in a general sense, you might be better off when you're going into this to find somebody who says, I will do the job for a fee and I'm not going to get any
You just about always have to pay something when you buy into these things.
Well,
a certain percentage.
Yeah, that's right. There are, although there are certain types of investments where there are no
right, like preferred utility stock, there's no commission when you buy that. But it is a really good point to make that you really should be careful who you are buying from and that you know what their commission is and that they don't try to sell you one thing and turn it over and sell you something else again right away. I think that happens a lot of time with older people, that they'll buy something like a health insurance policy and then somebody else will come along and say, oh, that's no good, I have one that's really good. And that they just want to sell it, you know, to get the commission that isn't really that much better. So it's, yes?
Well, and you get all of this mail, you know, these hospital supplements. Mm-hmm. Some of these older people, I know one of the ladies in our neighborhood thought she had several of these that she was paying money into.
Right.
And it's just a big waste.
Another thing we've heard about lately is selling people nursing home care policies, and there aren't hardly any companies that really will sell nursing home care policies. You know, there are probably many ands, ifs, and buts in them. Have you found that true, or do you sell any health insurance?
I sell none of it directly. Yeah. I refer it on to someone who is.
Have you ever heard of a nursing home policy?
No, not as such, no. But I sell none of that. I refer it to an associate who is knowledgeable. I'm not knowledgeable in health insurance. I stay away from it.
I think, you know, everyone hopes that someday there will be a policy for nursing home because that care can really eat up any estate after 4 or 5 years.
Because Medicare does not pay for that.
No, only so many days.
Yeah.
Right.
One of the problems you have with insurance, whether it's health or anything else, is that the basic concept of life insurance is to cover a contingency which may occur.
Right.
Once you get in, and of course a nursing home situation is something that may occur, it may not.
Mm-hmm.
But normally by the time you need the money, it's too late to start. Now the ideal nursing home, the way to finance that, is for a 20-year-old to start out and say, well look, I may end up in a nursing home, the requirements are going to be tremendous and I'm going to start putting money away for it. Well, you don't think about nursing homes till you're 65 years old, or you think about it when your mother is 70 years old and mm-hmm. she has to go in. And that, so from a practical standpoint, nursing home coverage is not something that should be covered by insurance. In a sense, it's like dental coverage. That shouldn't be covered by insurance. Number one, the dollar figures are small, first of all, and the expense of administering it really load the cost up. In other words, dental coverage is something that the individual should pay for. So,
A lot of people love to have a dental policy. Because the employer pays for it.
Right.
Whether
it's an expensive.
I have heard that idea, you know, spoken of, and I've read articles, though, that they hope that sometime the insurance industry will come up with a policy that starts as a younger person, like you say, will be built into every policy.
Yeah, those policies have always been available. They haven't had that name on them, but they've been available. And the problem that's present in the insurance industry, and I'm speaking, for example, let me give you an idea of a contract that's always been available. It's nothing but the simple old whole life. All you have to do is put money in on a regular basis. And it has one advantage. If you die early, the plan completes itself right then. You don't have to wait till you're 70 years old to get money back. But we have the problem in the insurance industry that we have to have the proper name on something so it's acceptable.
Right.
And we could call, my contention over the years has been that all the life insurance company would need is two types of contract. A whole life contract, which is the old standard one that builds cash value, and the other would be a term policy that's pure cost of dying. If you die a year from now, you pay the pure cost. But we have to sell the stuff. So we've got a book that's about this thick with all the different plans in it, and things become more complex and more complex. And one company puts this name on something that's identical somewhere else with another name. We have to catch your attention and get you to buy the product. So something which should be very simple is very complex, because life insurance has a bad name with many people, a bad connotation. Oh, you're just another life insurance salesman. Mm-hmm. They don't really understand how the product works. So, it's quite a problem.
Well, you mentioned nursing homes. It would seem to me that nursing homes care almost has to become a society's problem. Because quite obviously, we're talking from upper middle class here. Mm-hmm. And we don't represent the bulk of the population of the United States, and the problem is not limited to this group. It's
no, you know, I think it is society's problem now, though, don't you? Because most people use up their funds if they're going to have to stay in, and then the state has to pay the cost.
That's true.
So.
Society, in the long run,
right,
does take up
slack. If we want, you know, if we could possibly arrange it some other way, that is difficult on a lot of older people, I think, to use up all of their funds and know that they're on, they say, on welfare, you know. We don't feel that way about it. You know, if the person's paid every cent they have, then we as a society really need to look after them. But it's hard on the nursing homes too, I think.
It's really hard to see how some insurance concept on a private basis would work. You'd be projecting things, as you say, you'd have to start when you were very young to accumulate the kind of monies we're talking about, and what kind of care will be the norm 40 or 50 years from now, and how can one picture that? You know, back in the 1940s, how would we conceive of the nursing home situation we have now and the astronomical costs that go into it? You know, I think it's kind of unreasonable to think that you can plan something that's going to pay off and call it an insurance policy for that particular problem when you don't know what the problem is going to be administered as or look like when you get into your 70s or 80s.
Which I think highlights what you were saying about all this material that comes to you and to me in the mail about, you know, you must take this policy to, or you will have to go on welfare when you go to the nursing home. Be very suspicious that of what is being peddled if that kind of information comes to you.
The present system, and we're involved in it now because Betty's mother is in a nursing home. The present system in Arizona says that if an elderly person has used up all of his or her resources, then what is the figure? You can retain $1,000 or something like that. You're supposed to turn all of your money over then to the county. In their case, it's a county entity that administers it. And you turn over all of your money with $1,000, and then you are eligible for one of these retirement.
Does that include your home, too?
Yes. Does
include what?
Your home.
Yeah, equity in a home, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. So.
Yeah, there are many people in the nursing homes who have sold their homes, and they're using what they got from their homes to pay, and they have to use that all up before they can get anything
else. And of course, that can be done in the private, the church retirement homes. You know, you can buy a membership, or you can go in and pay so much a month, stay there as long as you live. Mm-hmm. And they may absorb some of the cost, you know, down the line, and they usually do. But otherwise, the government then is attempting to do the same thing.
Now, I suppose nursing homes all over charge about the same. It's $1,500 a month, and so your money goes
for good care.
Very fast.
And then if you can't meet that, if the combination of figures doesn't meet that, then people get into some of these substandard facilities that are...
Well, I don't want Phoenix. I think the substandard charge about the same as the others. They're all about the same, and some are just better care than others.
I think that in most nursing homes, the person who's on welfare and the person who's paying his way gets the same kind of care.
Yeah, yeah. They do, and
that what the state takes care of. That, so when you say, you know, for $1,500 for good care, I don't understand that. I mean, his,
well, I think
the welfare person gets the same kind, yes. And I don't think it's always good care.
No, that's true, but some nursing homes you get better care than other nursing homes. I mean, some are just better facilities than others, I believe. But I think they all charge about the same.
I think in Seattle now it's about $2,000 a month. It varies in different states.
I think Phoenix is a relatively low cost area for that sort of thing.
I bet all of us here, when we think about how much it costs, like for nursing home care, and when we look back and think about how much we made when we started work. I started teaching school and I made $90 a month. I got paid $10 extra to coach girls basketball. $100 a month. And then when you were talking about $2,000 a month, it just makes
But that's what you were saying, that it's hard to plan ahead that many years ahead.
Yes.
You don't know what it's going to cost then, or
besides,
what the situation is going to be, or anything.
This whole area, you know, just apart from the, just in terms of the structure and government intrusion into it and regulation, I mean, this whole thing is snowballing in terms of regulations that are going to impinge on nursing homes. So you can just imagine that you can hardly conceive of what is going to be the structure and so forth 40 or so years from now.
Right, because part of the reason they're so expensive is because the government put so many regulations. They had to do this, they had to do that, so they had to...
Paperwork.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Well, except that you're saying two different things here. You're talking about $1,500 for good care, and you're saying the government has put regulations on. Most of the nursing homes are giving good care because the government has put regulations on.
And they're also charging more because of it, you know, so the whole thing kind of works together, doesn't it?
Well, that's true, except that...
And we do need...
If we can afford it, we want our loved ones to have the best care.
Right.
That they can have.
You know, I always wish that was one thing churches would get into, was nursing homes, because the ones that are run by churches are so much better than the others.
That's true, yeah.
There's just no comparison. Like the Foss home in Seattle compared to one where we do evening prayer once a month. You know, the Foss home is so clean and so pleasant, and everyone treats the patients like they're a dignified human being. And this other one, you can see that the help is coming and going, and this place smells like urine and feces, and the people are dirty, you know, they're not washed off after meals, and it's just sad, that's all.
It's really hard to say about these regulations. I think some, obviously you need some, maybe you need quite a few, but you can see this taking on the proportions that one associates with the army or something, and people adopting the kind of defensive maneuvers of paper shuffling and presenting a good appearance and becoming a little cynical about the amount of bureaucracy that's impinging on them too. So, you know, I'm just a little concerned about what the course of events may be there, because this is becoming an increasingly structured thing. I see the people, professionals in it, resenting it, and I think this may, beyond a certain point, work to the detriment of really good care, too.
Especially when they change the regulations continually. I mean, you just have your records the way they said you should, and then the next team comes along and says, no, that's wrong, you should do it this way, and you spend your time with things like that rather than taking care of the patients. Maybe that will end. Well, I wish we could go on, but it's time to quit, and we didn't get to talk much about Social Security, so if anyone wants to, they can spot me someplace, and I'll sit down and tell you all about a book I read. It's called The Social Security Book by Jack Gomnitz, and it was written in 1984, and it's very complete. I got it at the library, so you could too. But one of the things that it tells that is kind of interesting is that those who retired in 1977 paid to Social Security $7,057 on the average, and they will receive probably $49,000. And the ratio of benefits to contributions is 7-1 in 1977. In 1988, the worker would have paid $33,000 in, gotten out $55,000. The ratio was 1.64-1. And those who retire in 2008 would have paid in $73,000 and will be getting out $73,000 with a ratio of 0.996-1. So you can see how the young folks are a little bit worried about what they're paying into Social Security. Yes?
The problem is that Social Security was not an insurance proposition. It was called insurance, mm-hmm. and it was not designed to build up the money to take care of us as we got to that point. Because the people who are paying for us right now, and I've contributed maximum through the 40 years or whatever mm-hmm. it is, the people who are paying that are the people who are putting the money in now. Although if I had put the money in, if there had been a plan available at that time, where that money that I put in, whatever the figure is,
you know, 7,000.
If that money had been put in a compound interest and clearly segregated, starting in 1937 right. or whatever it was, the amount necessary to take care of me conceivably could have come out.
Could have been that 49,000.
The high interest rates have been existing right. the last yeah. 15 or 20 years.
That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah. Again, the problem is that we are sitting here in a position where we can't go back and do the things we should have done. Now we can be missionaries to our children, our grandchildren, although you heard the story of Lazarus very recently. They won't listen. So the answer is, if you have some influence on your children or grandchildren, due to the fact that you have gray hair and bend down the road and so on, and there, if they respect you and listen, then some of them will go out and start their own programs to mm-hmm. supplement Social Security, because they're never going to get back from Social Security.
No.
Yeah.
I didn't think Social Security was meant originally as anything but a supplement. When it began, it wasn't intended to be to retire everybody. It was to be a supplement to a person's retirement.
But there are entirely too many other programs that Social Security has supported to the point where
now when they came out,
retirement is a very minor one.
Disability.
Mm-hmm. That's what did.
And that's what's done.
No. Medicare. The money came from the Social Security funds.
But the cost of living part of it, wasn't that put in by Lyndon Johnson?
Yes.
And
that COLA business is another thing that's escalated the cost too.
However, the point this gentleman made is the one that always raises my ire, because while my husband was working, we had many people in the state system that said, we've got to get out of Social Security and we've got to invest our money so that we will have it when we when you need it. Mm-hmm. And of course, it wasn't allowed. You couldn't do that. But nonetheless, we would have had the money. I have done just the amateur type of thing of trying to figure out what we would have had the money, probably more money, mm-hmm. For income than if we had contributed it to Social Security. So it does really irk me to be told that we are getting more money back than we put in, because that's lying with statistics. It's really not the truth.
One of the things that we as professional people particularly are faced with, and that is we may save as much as we want and lose completely by some type of, in a medical case, a malpractice, while some of these annuities and so on, particularly Social Security, is you're covered for that kind of thing. It's not your savings, and therefore, as I understand it, could not be taken from you. Is that right?
Oh yeah, they never touch your Social Security. Mm-hmm.
Which is an advantage, which one needs to think about.
I think another point that I think is overlooked, and I think everybody benefits because there is a Social Security system, and that one way or another we would have been taking care of a lot of these people by another name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's looking from our point in time where we are.
Well, yeah. I think also looking back in the 1930s or 40s when the program first began, I think that the economy of the country has benefited because the older people were not on welfare and because they were able to spend money.
Well, the other thing is that most of us don't save. You know, I mean, you say if you had put that money back, it would have earned interest over these years, but a lot of people have not put that money away to have it earn interest. Some would, but a lot wouldn't.
Particularly those to whom Social Security is practically the only thing they have.
Yeah.
Which is, I suppose, an awfully large proportion of the... I know when a dad couldn't retire until he was 80. He'd work for the church.
that's another situation.
And, you know, Social Security didn't come in for church workers till he was 78, so he had to work 2 years and then he could retire at 80.
Another thing that happens sometimes is that when a person gets older and older, like into your late 80s, and you do use up your funds because of inflation, then you do have that basic Social Security left anyway, which is better than nothing. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing all of your ideas.